This cassette is the recording of the event honoring Don Brown on his 50th anniversary as a newspaper man. Goodspeed, you being a friend of Don Brown's for many years and an acquaintance, what do you think about all this?
It's a wonderful procedure. I wish I were able to take a better part in it. I'll applaud every possible chance.
Very good. You know why I'm recording this, don't you, Frank?
I'm afraid, but...
Well, part of this is for the Historical Society. I have a cassette tape, and we're going to have the voice recordings of you various fellows that have
made. If I had known that, I'd have been on my feet and shouting like a demon.
Well, we're sure happy to have this much of you, and thank you, Frank.
Thanks.
Let us pray. God, we speak to you now and call upon your name, asking your blessing upon our being together as we honor our friend Donald Brown, who for 50 years has faithfully served our Waseca community as editor of our hometown newspaper. Through all these years, we thank you that Don has made us think and then inspired us through his editorials toward community development and national responsibility. So we celebrate with Don today, and we say thank you to him for his contribution to Waseca, and for opening windows that have made it possible for a world view. And we ask now that the festivities of this day will indeed be an expression of our love to Don, an appreciation of thanks, and a word of joy to him from his many friends. This we pray in the name of Jesus, the Lord of life, now and eternally. Amen.
Thank you, Paul. Success. Ralph Waldo Emerson wrote about success. He said, success is to laugh often and much, to win the respect of intelligent people and affection of children, to earn the appreciation of honest critics and endure the betrayal of false friends, to appreciate beauty, to find the best in others, to leave the world a bit better, whether by a healthy child, a garden patch, or a redeemed social condition. To know even one life has breathed easier because you have lived. This is to have succeeded. I don't think there would be anybody else that could tell the history of Don's 50 years as editor of the Waseca Daily Journal better than his longtime friend Edgar F. Johnson. So Edgar, would you please do that for us?
Thank you, Arthur. He and I don't require the same microphone setting. When Arthur asked me last summer if I would participate in this observance of Don's 50th anniversary as editor of the Waseca Journal, I accepted at once because I wanted to have a part in honoring a great friend who has been an unfailing help and encouragement and inspiration to me all of that time. It did seem an easy task, too, after all that I had observed and experienced with him during this half century. But what do you say about our number one citizen, a man who has so continuously and so long been on public display that everyone should know all but the most intimate details of his life? In that predicament, I had to conclude that for those who have known him a long time, and perhaps still more for those who have not, I could indulge in some reminiscences, although they do say that's an unfailing sign of old age. And Don started very early as a printer and a newspaper man in his father's shop in New Richland. In 1918, he and I had a parallel experience, although not realizing it, both being briefly in the Army while attending the University of Minnesota. the SATC, for Students Army Training Corps, they called it. One of Don's assignments was guard duty on the 3rd Avenue Bridge across the Mississippi River, and I believe he takes some credit for its having survived despite having no ammunition for his rifle. My guard duty was at the rear entrance of the main engineering building on the campus, and it too suffered no enemy damage. I didn't know Don then, or until 6 years later, 50 years ago, when he came here as the editor of the journal after being a partner with H.E. Siebert in the New Richland Star. Newspaper editors, for me at least, have had a certain aura about them, men of great sagacity, of impressive social and political influence, able to sway public opinion, commanding immense respect. So I've wondered a bit in recent years how some of our favorite newspapers' editors could be so youthful, until I now reflect on the fact that Don was then a rosy-cheeked 25-year-old. He had hair, too. I don't recall first meeting Don, but his employer, Will Clement, used to call me. After all, I had an electrical engineering degree and a screwdriver. He called me to service the thermostat on the electric melting pot for the type metal on the linotype machine on occasions when Walt Helmke had trouble with it. It may have been on such a visit, or more likely it was in connection with the occasional printing jobs I needed. At any rate, very early, I was impressed with the unvarying patience and helpful interest in my small jobs. I mentioned linotype operator Walt Helmke, whom I had known from my high school days when he played first clarinet in the Waseca concert band. I played tuba. When the journal needed a new man, they hired Bernard McCarthy and arranged for Walt to teach Bernard to operate his linotype. And Walt threw in 6 clarinet lessons free. Bernard is here. We could be favored with a clarinet solo. No? The newspaper business used to be even more competitive than now, and most of you will recall the Waseca Herald, edited by J.P. Coughlin. J.P. started a column entitled 45 Years Ago. Now, there had been a long controversy, between the Herald and the Journal over which paper had the longest direct succession through name changes and ownership changes. Here was the Journal's chance. Their files went back 2 years earlier than the Herald, so they became one up by printing a 47-year-ago column. It didn't last through the daily papers, though. Newspapers were oriented politically in earlier days, the Herald being strongly Democratic and the Journal equally stalwart Republican. Don took to that situation readily, although never indulging in acrimony. Local elections were not partisan, of course, but election nights were busy ones at the Journal, being on Tuesdays, the day before their weekly publication date. In addition to keeping the staff busy at night tabulating and reporting the returns, Don kept a crowd of interested residents in front of his print shop, the building now occupied by Brown Electric, where he personally posted a running total, hand lettering it on the big plate glass window. Remember, his audience was out there in the street and he was back of that window. Just try lettering from right to left in reverse without a miss. He became an expert at that. State and national politics have always had Don's close interest and participation. Of course, as a newspaper editor, all political figures sought his favor, so he got to know them well. In addition, he was Waseca County Republican chairman from 1936 to 1954, 18 years, a recognized way of accumulating gold stars that might come in handy sometime. That may have helped him in 1941, when he became deputy registrar of the Minnesota Motor Vehicle Department, whereby he issued license plates to all Waseca County applicants for a small fee, of course. Another potential reward for a faithful service might have been that of postmaster, then, as you recall, always filled as a political appointment. At one time, so the story goes, he was somewhat hopeful of having it, as his partner Will Clement had in an earlier date. Finally, it might have been his, but by then business and other demands on his time caused him to relinquish the opportunity. In 1958, certainly Don had reached a pinnacle of achievement in many respects. When August Andreessen, first district representative in Congress, passed away, Don and many friends decided he should try for that office. It was a strenuous primary campaign and the prospect seemed excellent, but it was not to be. Instead, his opponent, Al Quie, won the nomination in the election. But think what it would have meant if Don had gone to Washington. Waseca County was shortly thereafter severed from the first district. So I presume he would have had to move to Rochester or at least to Meriden, and we could no longer claim him. City governmental affairs early claimed Don's attention, partially perhaps because of the reporting task at council meetings. Not surprisingly, he was named to the Charter Commission in 1930, which resulted in a proposal for a new city charter calling for the commission form of government. It failed to receive the required majority of votes. Again in 1950 and 1955, he was appointed to the Charter Commission, and in that case, it was my privilege to serve with him. I recall that he was easily the most knowledgeable and influential member of that group of 16 citizens. Earlier, it had also been my pleasure to sit with Don on the Board of Education. He had a great interest in our school system, aided no doubt by having three sons enrolled, athletes also, you all might all remember. Unfortunately, he didn't file for re-election, and I wonder if one reason was that as a member of the board, his newspaper could not print the official records, so that business had to go to the Herald. Really, too great a sacrifice for an unpaying job. His interest in school affairs saw Don as a member of the Southside School Advisory Committee, which was instrumental in getting voters' approval of that new building in 1962. But that was the second similar experience for him. Hartley school bonds had failed to carry in several elections back in 1957, and there was a real crisis looming up in elementary classroom space. At that time, Don and his close friend, former Chief Justice Henry Gallagher, habitually ate Saturday noon lunch at the Busy Bee. They had a rather curious practice of eating bran flakes for dessert, really. The two of them and I were discussing the school predicament, and I was invited to join the lunch group on the condition that I also adopt bran flakes for dessert. And it became the Bran Club with no more formality than that. We worked out a plan for the Hartley School Citizens Committee, whereby some 30 people were organized and made recommendations that led to a substantial revision of the plans, and the next bond election was successful. Incidentally, the Brand Club grew and still meets every Saturday, just as informally or more so because even the name has been shed with no longer any dietary requirement. That is only one of so many organizations that have claimed his membership that I'm sure even he could not enumerate them. If sometime you look at this wall over here, you will find so many records of organizations and achievements that you'll see what I mean. One more where I can claim equal mention with him is the Lions Club. We are the only two charter members from 1927 still active. There are others, some in this audience, but they're not active any longer, just Don and I. Locally, the list, past or present, includes Grace Lutheran Church, the Masonic Lodge and the Shrine Club, the American Legion, Lakeside Club, Waseca County Historical Association, the Anti-Horse Thief Detectives, the Waseca County Fair Board, the Boy Scouts Board of Review, the Chamber of Commerce, the Waseca Development Corporation, the Board of Directors of the Waseca Canning Company, that's before Birdseye, and the South Central Education Association. Statewide, he has been a director and president of the Minnesota Taxpayers Association, president of the Minnesota Editorial Association, president and a director of the Minnesota Press Club. Some of these deserve special emphasis. Don, along with a number of people, Pete Madden, Kyle Summerstead, Herman Peterson, and others, must have the principal credit for having organized, promoted, and sold stock in the Waseca Canning Company in 1929. You know it now as the Waseca plant of the Birdseye Division of General Foods Corporation. The South Central Education Association, which serves the interests of the University of Minnesota Technical College, is the continuation of a group that was initially responsible for the school having been established here, and Don played an indispensable part in that great achievement. I'm reminded of a comment Don made once a few years ago about all these and many other organizations. A little plaintively, I thought, He said, they always put me on the publicity committee. For good reason, of course, he owned the newspaper. All this may sound as though hard work was all done new. In a sense, perhaps it is true. But if you love your work enough, that's its own reward, and I'm sure he does. Of course, there have been diversions. I've been told of some of his feats on this golf course, but strangely, and perhaps just as well, I never witnessed them. He does love travel. One adventurous bit was when, as a guest of the United States Navy, he was on a North Atlantic cruise in rough weather. It may be that the Navy Department was out to show the press that life was not just one sightseeing tour among tropical islands. Don would like to revisit archaeological sites in Greece and the Mideast, and he has a special interest in Russia. On one of these trips, he became friendly with an English gentleman who listened intently to Don's exposition of the details of running a small-town print shop and country newspaper. Only later did he learn that his friend was perhaps the biggest printer in all of Britain. Many of Don's shorter travel destinations appear to involve horses. Whether the fascination is an appreciation for beautiful animals or the excitement of the $2 window, I wouldn't speculate. But I've heard he has an uncanny ability to pick winners. Perhaps, if pressured, he would reveal his system. If it is a special gift for predicting the future, it failed him at least once. He had told a small group that Japan would never go to war with the United States. When did he say that? It was at the family dinner table on Sunday at noon, December 7, 1941, at the very hour when Pearl Harbor was being devastated. Time is passing, and I've said little about the business of printing. Only 3 years after Don came as editor, he became a partner with Will Clement, and I know he will bear me out that no finer associate could be had. Another 2 years, and the Great Depression of the 30s began. It could not have failed to affect the printing and newspaper business as it did the rest of us, and utmost economies had to be practiced. On one occasion, the shop needed a new ink knife, used to spread ink over the rollers on the presses, and Don sent a man to the hardware store to get it. You would know it as a wide-blade putty knife, and in those days, perhaps it cost 50 cents, maybe less. When his man came back with two, after all, they had several presses, Don asked him, "Did you have to buy two?" Ink also was precious. There were jobs needing small amounts, and Don is said to have used a matchstick in applying it. Today, Brown Printing Company, I'm told, uses 1.5 million pounds of it every year. Don was by no means just a front office man, though, although one should really see his two-fingered typing speed. He was a printer, a master of all of the required skills, and he spent much of his time working at any of the shop's many jobs. There were occasions when it meant working most of the night, and if not all night, and he shared the work with his crew, as when they had a contract for printing publicity material in newspaper format for a traveling embalmed whale. Print orders received one day had to be shipped the next, involving all-night work, especially if it coincided with the journal's press day. Another time was when the state buttermakers had their 3-day convention in Waseca, and Don rather dubiously wondered if they could get out daily papers for it, their first such venture. The crew said, "Sure we can," and they did. By the 50s, Wayne and Grove came back to Waseca to join their father. From about 1951 to 1955, Wayne Bumps, as you know him, had a partnership interest in the business, and one of their principal jobs was the Herter catalog. It was of quite different character from a newspaper, and they agreed eventually that it should be split off to form Brown Printing Company. You're all familiar with Bump's phenomenal success in that venture, and as he tells it, that couldn't have happened without his father's encouragement and interest, not to mention the leniency of the terms of his financial aid. Perhaps most of you know, too, how after agonizing over the possibilities of success or failure, the Journal and Herald became Waseca's daily journal. By then, of course, Other had joined the company and has played a great part in its recent history. That includes formation of the Quad County Press. Don had concluded that the day of the successful, locally printed small-town papers was about over, and they have sold the idea so that today they print 25 of them right here in Waseca. 50 years have seen great changes. One thing has not changed, the personal qualities that characterize Don Brown. He typifies what I said was my ideal of an editor, but more too, because of his unvarying friendliness, his private charities few people know, his humility, and his regard for others. And it's the same for everyone, his co-workers, his readers, the fellow citizens, and people in high places. I'm sure they will all join with me in wishing Don all the pleasure and satisfaction that should be his on the completion of these 50 years. May God bless you, Don, and grant you years of serenity and peace of mind in the knowledge of a job well done.
Thank you, Edgar. I knew that nobody else could have done a better job than you. Don has always been a great supporter of our Congressman Anchor Nelson, and Anchor has asked to say a few words today.
Thank you, Arthur, our honored friend, and my constituents still until January 1. I will then be out of the political arena, and you will have elected a new member to the Congress of the United States. Arthur called me some time ago and wanted to know about my schedule and indicated that a party would be held here honoring Don, and I said, well, my schedule will fit yours. I'll be out here. But one thing that surprised me was a reference about Don lettering from right to left. Now, I've never noticed that Don moves to the left. I think he stays comfortably in the right column. And I mean that right as it is intended. I see many friends here. I shook hands with Dr. Macy from the University of Minnesota, and I remember the many fond memories of meeting with him in the Finance Committee in the state legislature. And thinking back to the experience in the state legislature, and that goes back to 1935, and I always remember our honored guest, Don Brown, as one of the solid members of the rural press. Those of us who are in politics, we've seen them come, we've seen them go. Those that are for everything, for everybody, without any regard to the soundness of the promise they make. But some of us who sort of have come up in the tradition that promises should be kept, promises ought to be sound, promises ought to be in the public interest. And we've always been comfortable in the fact that we've had men like Don Brown that would back us when we took a position. And that's been one of the things that has prompted me to want to be here today, because Don has demonstrated that this great country provides opportunities. It provides opportunity to serve people here, provide jobs for others if you have the ability to do it, and Don did have that. So he is the real example of America moving in the right manner. So Don, I'm glad to be here today to join with your many friends in wishing you well, looking to the future, and congratulating you on what you have done, and also to join with everybody that's here to say to you, thank you.
Thank you, Anchor. Dr. William Hugh, the Deputy Vice President and Dean of the Institute of Agriculture, Forestry, and Home Economics, will say a few words about Don's contribution to education.
Thank you, Arthur. It's my pleasure to speak for the University of Minnesota because Don Brown has certainly made many contributions. Anchor Nelson made comment that Dean Macy is here, and I'm going to ask Dean Macy in a bit to make some personal comments because he had the pleasure of working more closely with Don than I did. But I think I speak for the entire university, Don, when I say thank you for the many things that you have done. And it is interesting what can happen in terms of influencing, although you perhaps think of Don as your man, he really is a citizen of the whole state, because many of the editorials he wrote, and I don't know just how you did this, somehow they would appear out in the other weeklies and daily papers around the state, and these were very significant. The one I think that you probably will recall the most, and certainly those of us in the university do, was the Amendment 2. That came at the time I just moved into administration. And essentially, it had to do with whether or not the state of Minnesota would continue to build public buildings. And of course, to the university, this has always been, I expect it will continue to be, a very major need and function. And so on that one point, I think, Don, you played a major leadership role, and certainly Dean Fenske, who was formerly with the Institute. For the Institute of Agriculture, Forestry, and Home Economics, Don has served on our advisory council. At the time he served on that advisory council, it was just then known as the Institute of Agriculture. Actually, I think during the year that you were either vice chairman or chairman, a discussion was held within the university that the College of Agriculture should be kind of set by itself, and that the two units, forestry and home economics, be separate colleges. I'm sure you're aware that although that was 1962 that recommendation was made, it was not accomplished until 1970, but they still remain under the umbrella of the Institute. And now I find in the last 3 months I have had to kind of share myself with those three areas, although my particular professional background is agriculture. But I would like to take the opportunity, Don, to express the appreciation of the university for the many years of service that you've given in your many roles, and to thank you for that. Then also to introduce to this group Dr. Harold Macy, who is Dean Emeritus, who at the time that Don was active on the Advisory Council of the Institute was the Dean of the then Institute of Agriculture. Harold Macy.
Thank you, Dr. Yoog. Some of the older folks here begin to shrink when you move into these younger men that have just spoken to you that need a microphone up by the ceiling rather than down on the floor. Some of us have been on our knees more often than these big fellows. Don, it's a real pleasure to me, a special pleasure, to come down here on this beautiful day to say thank you, as these other friends have said to you before, for what you have done, what you have been. It has been my pleasure to know Don for many years, and I've always looked upon him as a man who would tell us exactly what he thought, how he thought, and why he thought as he did. It's wonderful to have a community, a leader like Don has been for Waseca for so long. Now, speaking as an older man, Don, it's very difficult to grow old gracefully. But don't let that bother you at all. You'll get old all right. The graceful part will take care of itself. And we're happy you could be here today, and I think the good Lord is smiling and shining upon you with a day such as we have, and trying to say thank you for all that you've been to so many of us. Good luck, Don. Enjoy this golden age of retirement. Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to say a few words in behalf of Don.
Thank you very much. We have a couple telegrams here I'd like to share with you. One from the White House. To Don, your half century as editor of the Waseca Daily Journal is a significant milestone in your community as well as in the profession you have served so well. The qualities for which you have gained the admiration and respect of your readers will surely be a useful example for others who follow in your footsteps. I wholeheartedly join in sending you my best wishes on this happy occasion, Gerald R. Ford, President of the United States. I have another one here that's a little lengthier. I regret that I must remain in Washington this weekend and cannot be present to join in your 50th anniversary observance as editor of the Waseca Daily Journal. Nevertheless, it is with great pleasure that I salute in this way an exceptional newspaper man and dear friend who has contributed in an outstanding manner to the enlightenment and progress of our state. The manner in which you have